Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
I'm so sorry I'm late. I was just talking to my sister about protecting abortion rights.
Wait, didn't we already do that in Ohio? We passed issue 1 last year.
I know, by a wide margin too. But now it's up to our state Supreme Court to decide whether they enforce it or ignore it.
Ignore it? Will they really do that?
They will if we don't keep extremists out of the court. But we can protect our rights by electing Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that. Listen, I can barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
Here's a trick. All you have to do is remember, don't stop fighting.
Don't stop fighting. Oh, I get it. DSF, Donnelly Stewart Forbes. I love that.
Tell everyone you know, if you supported issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue, a community of women who care about reproductive rights as much as you do.
The following broadcast may contain free thinking and open-minded discussion, ideas, skepticism, and adult subject matter. Topics will be discussed using adult language, sometimes gratuitously. Get ready to move the conversation forward. This ain't your granddad's news and comment show. This is I Doubt It Podcast with Brittany Page and Jesse Dollimore.
Welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us. Episode 930, a nice round number. I'm your host, Jesse Dollimore, joined today by the lovely, talented, and indeed scholarly Brittany Page, everybody.
Well, I have finally reached the age where I moved my neck a little differently, a little incorrectly.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me essentially immobile for 24 hours. And I've been putting copious amounts of icy hot on my neck and my back. And I've been using a heating pad. I had to go get those things because I didn't previously have a heating pad.
Do you think this is election stress related?
It's very possible because I was worried that I was going to get torticollis again because I've had torticollis before.
Explain. No one knows what that is.
So it's Rhinac is another
Rhinac.
Name. Rhinac. Another name for it. And it's something that babies
another
get.
Another thing no one knows what it is.
So it's something that babies get and me.
Oh.
And it is when like the muscles in your neck tense up. There's doctors listening to this that are like horrified. It's like when your muscles in your neck tense up and like twist your head to one side. And so when I had torticollis the first time.
It's a crick neck.
Yeah. So when I had torticollis the first time, I could not bend my head a certain way. I think it was pushed down to the right.
Was that grad school stress?
It happened in grad school, yeah. Mm. And I tried to go to work while I had it. And I remember showing up to work and my boss was like, what's going on?
Looked at you like you were an alien, not because of the neck situation, but because you showed up to work.
And I was like, well, I can still like work, you
right.
know? I just can't, my neck hurts and I
right.
can't put my head up straight, but I can still work, you know?
Well, I'm realizing now that the stress of the election and the stress that I feel is manifesting because I just had a dentist appointment during which she said, we need to get you a mouth guard because you're really, you're going nutty with the champing at the champs.
Mm-hmm.
And then last night, I cracked a molar from just biting down and being
Yeah.
I guess generally stressed out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I think it is the stress. Huh. Probably not great.
Well, there's only 2 weeks left. There's only that many teeth left in my... I have more teeth in my mouth than there are days between now and the election. So I'm going to be fine.
Yeah. Well, we should also maybe talk about a recent event that we went to, a book event for National Abortion Federation, or people that were associated with the National Abortion Federation. There's a new book that was published called We Choose To, a memoir of providing abortion care before, during, and after Roe. And it's written by Dr. Curtis Boyd and Dr. Glenna Haverson Boyd, Boyd with a B. And it was a great event. I was surprised that when we showed up there quite early, there was only one protester. And I guess I didn't think that there would be protesters. I don't know why.
Because we live in D.C. And, I mean, this is why I didn't think about it either.
Mm-hmm.
It's because we live in Washington, D.C., which is very liberal, very progressive.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't see that shit.
Yeah. Yeah. And apparently more protesters showed up during the event.
Yeah.
And so we're listening to the two authors talk about their book. One is they both have doctor in their name. So one is a PhD, one is an MD. And the MD was providing abortions before Roe v. Wade.
Yeah, when it was illegal, when it at a risk to his profession and his freedom.
Right. And so it was really fascinating listening to them talk. I haven't read the book yet, but, you know, if this sounds like something you're interested in, it's out now. And during the event, we started to notice that there were two people sitting in the audience acting weird. And because...
Suspicious enough that I texted you.
Mm-hmm.
Alerting you, I think these two dudes are a problem. They might be a problem.
Yeah, and since we are both abnormal and traumatized, we are on high alert and struggle with hypervigilance. And so...
You may struggle with it. I don't fucking struggle with it.
Okay.
I'm happy for it.
Good. And so we noticed they were acting weird, and so you got up because... You know, you don't know. I mean, the authors of the book were talking about how there's been bomb threats on their life.
They've had clinics that have been burned to the ground.
Yeah,
that
I mean,
they were in charge of.
This is like serious shit for these people.
Yeah,
so
for sure.
You don't know what someone's mindset is coming into this event and what they're planning to do. And their leg was tapping, both of their legs were tapping, and they were shaking and acting fidgety. And I'm like, what is going on with these people? So I could no longer focus on the event. You stood up in case you needed to physically do something.
Well, I don't know if you know, Brittany, but much like Liam Neeson, I have a certain set of skills.
Okay. Yes.
Well, I did. I stood up just in case. You know, I don't know. You never know.
And so I continued to watch them and make so much eye contact with them that I think it was making them uncomfortable.
It was making the little squirrely guy very uncomfortable.
But I wanted them to know I was noticing them.
I see you, bro.
I understand something's happening here.
Yeah, yeah.
And someone at least is paying attention. And so then I started noticing that one of them kept taking his phone out and looking at something. And I realized he had the notes app open and it said questions. And I was like, okay. So they're probably protesters, and they're probably wanting to, like, do something disruptive to the event, likely not violence, but just wanting to ask maybe a disruptive question about, like, you know, how enjoyable was it for killing babies your whole career or something like that,
yeah.
You know? And
that didn't material. I was actually shocked that he was super respectful with his ham-fisted, obviously pointed biased questions about it. But it was, I mean, if they're not capable of answering questions like that he asked, then what are they doing writing a book?
Right. They were questions that were like very specific about the National Abortion Federation guidelines or something.
Policies, real inside baseball shit.
Yeah. And I was like, wow, he's not going for the baby killer stuff.
Right.
He's not, you know, he's not doing any of the stuff you would expect. He was very nervous, though. He continued to shake and his voice was shaky. And the other one was recording him and he had been practicing recording to make sure he could get a good video. And he was shaking, too. So I think they were just just ultimately super nervous to, you know, take a stand for the cause in the way that they did. And
just nervous anti-abortion nerds.
Yeah. So it ended up being not super remarkable, but on the way out, the staff of the bookstore, they stopped us and they said, there's protesters out here. They have some signs that are pretty graphic.
Yeah, your typical, you know, aborted fetus, bloody, manipulated to be even worse than it is kind of sign.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah.
And so she said, you know, we can take you out a different exit so you don't have to be subjected to that. And I'm like, I live for this shit. Like, let me out here. and it ended up being, you know, not a big deal. But there were quite a few. I would say maybe around 15, maybe up to 20. I don't know.
Yeah,
they kept
yeah.
coming into the bookstore, too, and, like, milling about in the aisle. And we're like,
just
sit down and enjoy the show, guys. Mostly men, too, by the way. Mostly.
Vast majority were men. Like, there may have been a couple of ladies out there.
Yeah.
But it was a bunch of white, straight males lodging their we disapprove, harumph.
Styx has a song for that.
Do they?
Too much time on my hands.
Ah.
Yes.
All right.
No, it didn't start playing in your head for you
when
you were talking about it?
We will not be playing it here for copyright reasons, obviously.
We don't want to get busted. That is correct. Yeah.
But you know what we do have to play is some voicemails, and we would like to give you an opportunity to call in and get your voice on the record as well. 657-464-7609. And of course, you can email idoubtitatdollamore.com. Let's go to Brent. Going to go to him like he's on the phones, Brittany. Brent in Canada.
Hi, Jesse and Brittany. I just listened to your podcast, and I wanted to address something that I thought might help some of you down there. I'm from Canada, but my dad is American, and my dad is a Vietnam vet. And he moved up here after the war because of the conditions that were down there. They were treating the Vietnam veterans unfairly. He was spit on and all this kind of things when he was back. When he came back, he was drafted, so he did not have a choice to go, but he went and he did what he needed to do. He doesn't talk about it very much, but I remember you talking about in the podcast about you being, you know, you were upset about voters that are doing a protest vote because they don't want to vote for Kamala because of, you know, whatever they believe in, and it's a selfish thing. And my dad was kind of the same way. He didn't want to vote. He hadn't voted since 1971, since he moved. And I talked to him about it, and he's 80 now, and I talked to him about it, and he was upset, and he's still been upset about it for years and years and years and decades. But he finally decided to vote in this election, and I got him all registered. I helped him get his package. I helped him fill it out, and we mailed it off last week. And I just wanted to let you know there is a way to talk to these people and there is a way to get to them, because I didn't think he'd ever vote again because of what happened to him. And, you know, like I said, he does not talk about Vietnam very often. I know that that's a difficult subject for him, and I don't think I'll ever get anything out of what he did or what happened in Vietnam. But we did get him to vote. And I just want you to know, as a neighbor, we're thinking about you. We wish you all the best, and we love you, and we're doing our best up here, too. So I just wanted to give you that little story, and I hope you guys do well down there. Keep up the good work. Thanks again.
I fucking love Canadians. I sure do love Canadians.
Well, I will tell you what, however long that voicemail was, I felt good the entire duration of that call, and then as soon as it stopped, I no longer felt good. So... It was very fleeting, but I do appreciate the message from
Brent. You
got
a little relief on the torticollis while Brent was talking.
I just, because I am having conversations with people who aren't voting, I am finding that, you know, it's not going super successfully. And so
your conversations,
right?
And, not going well.
And so I feel like I would feel better about it if I was being more successful. And in fact, I was called hysterical yesterday for talking about what a danger Donald Trump is. So it is quite frustrating to be in a situation where you are trying to talk to people, you are trying to get people to vote and see the gravity of the situation, and it seems at every step, it is not happening.
Yeah, again, you know, I don't want to just rehash everything we went over last episode, but it is, I believe, the height of selfishness and privilege for people to withhold a vote when the stakes are as absolutely clear as they are this time around. Has Joe Biden navigated U.S. policy appropriately relative to Gaza and the conflict in Israel and the genocide in Gaza? No, fuck, of course not. It's been abysmal. It's been immoral, as far as I'm concerned, continuing to fund weapons for Israel that is using them horribly. Yeah, of course. But this isn't, we're not allowed. You have to make the calculation of what is going to cause the least damage, and how can we put into the, again, we're rehashing everything we did last episode, how can we put people into power that we can have some ability to move and pressure and move left? And that's absolutely, without doubt, the Democrats.
Yeah.
It just is. It's clear that that's what it is, and it is selfish and privileged to put marginalized groups in harm's way because of whatever issue, whatever calculations you're making. And it's always done in a look at me, this is what I'm doing, this is how I feel about it, this is, it's not done in silence, it's not done in, it's always look at me.
Mm-hmm. So, thank you, Brent, for that. Let's try to hang on to the positive message that was in that, and let's try to hold on to it tight, because it's going to be, oh, I just hurt my neck. So that really was not for comedic effect. That really happened. So, all right. Thank you. It's exactly the noise that my neck made. Thank you, Brent, in Canada. We appreciate that. And we have another call from Kristen in California.
Hi, Jesse. Brittany. This is Kristen from California. The most beautiful word in the dictionary is
this a joke?
Oh my god, I just had a mini stroke. Quintessential. Quintessential. That's a beautiful word.
You know, I had thank you, Kristen. I had some time to think about this because it was just sprung on me last time when I said that
Wheelie D
was the most beautiful word. Now, I think, I don't know about most beautiful, but a word I really like and an attribute in people that I cherish and actually prize in myself. And I would say the word is loyalty, because it encompasses, it quintessentially encompasses, so many things. Because if you're loyal to someone, it is like, if you love someone, but you're disloyal, you don't really love them. Like, so I think loyalty for me is it.
Okay.
Either that or pusillanimous.
All right. Well, thank you, Kristen. We hope you're okay, by the way. And
that it was not, in fact, a mini stroke.
Yes, we do not want that to happen. So hopefully you're okay. But I will just read it as building suspense. That's what it was.
That's perfect. Very much building suspense. So we do, again, have a voicemail line and an email line. We would invite you to this conversation. Help us move the conversation forward. 657-464-7609. And of course, as always, you can email a voice memo from your smartphone. Please keep them at fewer than 3 minutes to idoubtit@dollamore.com. The other thing we would do is invite you to support the show, help produce this program. You can go to patreon.com/idoubtitpodcast and help us do just that. Move the conversation forward on an episode by episode basis. And this is the moment, as I stall for Brittany to find the email.
I have it.
All right.
What do you think?
To thank our Patreon supporters, new ones.
Thank you to our new Patreon supporters, Cynthia S.
Cynthia S.
Carol K.
Carol K.
And Dania S.
Dania S.
And it's possible I did not pronounce that correctly, so feel free to correct me on that. And also, by the way, it's not just me. Jesse also mispronounced it if I mispronounced it. So it's both of us together, okay?
Wow.
Listen, if I'm going down, you're going
down. Straight under the bus.
That's prick shit, bruh. That's prick shit.
So thank you to our new Patreon supporters. Thank you to our old Patreon supporters. Not old, you know, just...
Existing,
yes. Although it's a compliment to be old, right? I mean, I'm getting old. My neck is hurting. It's
get
a good
off
time.
My lawn!
So we could not do the show without you. We really appreciate you. And we want to hear from you if you have voted. We want to know your voting plan, if you have voted, how you're feeling about the election, if your neck is giving out because of stress, if you're grinding your teeth down because of stress. So
I cracked that fucking that crown right in half. I kept it to show to you.
Yeah, yeah.
Great.
I had a picture on my phone this morning of a broken tooth. So again, thank you. We appreciate you. And let's get into it.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Why do so many dogs die before their time? Actress and dog activist Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. Superfood Complete by Badlands Ranch is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including premium protein-packed beef, nutrient-dense organ meat, heart-healthy salmon, gut-healthy vegetables, and several superfoods vital to your dog's health. And because high-heat cooking can add unhealthy things to your dog's food, Superfood Complete uses air drying, so it gets cooked low and slow. This means it has the convenience of kibble, but the health benefits of whole foods. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible benefits, go to BadlandsRanch.com/save50 right now to get up to 50% off your order and a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's BadlandsRanch.com/save50 today. All dogs are unique. Your dog's results can and will vary.
Did you know that in Ohio, the state Supreme Court could just ignore the Reproductive Rights Amendment we passed last year?
But so many Ohioans voted for it.
That's why we need to keep extremists out of the court by voting for Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that.
Here's the trick. Just remember, don't stop fighting. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes. If you supported Issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue.
Stalemocracy. Facing down pessimistic politics with realistic optimism.
Can we talk about the town hall last night on CNN?
Yeah, so...
The town hall, by the way, that was supposed to be a debate between Donald Trump and Kamala Harris. But chickened out.
Mm-hmm. That was a good chicken.
He's a coward.
Yeah, so...
I could do a turkey, too.
Kamala Harris did a town hall with quote-unquote, undecided voters.
Yeah, yeah.
And I always like when we get more information on these people, because at least one was like an election worker and a registered Republican, and I'm like...
Is that right?
Didn't they say that about one of the guys who stepped up to ask a question?
I usually don't pay attention to that part.
I think it was the guy who, when I watched afterward, you know, because I watched afterward the debrief that they
did.
Was
it the chubby guy with like the chest hair that was just like trying to escape from the top of his white t-shirt?
I don't see, none of those details stuck out to me. Huh. But it was a guy wearing glasses, and I believe he had a white or light colored shirt on.
Okay.
But I don't remember the chest hair.
Like a sport coat?
I don't remember the sport coat or the chest hair.
Right.
Chest hair did not register with me, I guess. So I did watch the debriefing afterward where John King asked these people if the town hall moved the needle for them
or if
the attention that they're getting is, you know, not enough for them yet. They want to get more for the next 11 days being the undecided voter. So who knows if they're actually undecided, right, is the point. So, of course, if we were to talk about this like this was a normal election, we would have all kinds of criticism for the way that Kamala Harris performed. Trust me, as I was watching it, I'm like, you're not answering this question. That's a terrible answer. You need to talk about this.
Yeah.
In so many different ways.
Both of us at different times in the town hall had to be shut up by the other one because we started to rant and rave about the answer that was given. And we were interrupting continuing of the other person to hear what was going on.
Right, including, by the way, and let me just highlight one of them. When Anderson, this was a frustrating moment for me, when Anderson is like, if you have all of these policies that you want to implement that you think are going to help people, why haven't you done that for the past 4 years? And I do not understand what it is about the media training that is not telling, you know, Kamala Harris or whatever, she's afraid to do this, but educate the public about how things work, right? That they did get things done, list some of those high mark achievements, and then also talk about how in order to get a lot of the legislation done that she wants done, she needs people who support that legislation.
Yeah.
And so if those things sound good to voters, then they need to be putting people in office that support those things as well.
Yeah.
And there's people like Republicans who don't support those things and will stand in the way of those things. You know, anyway, I won't get into it. So the
point of that being, look, we'll just pull the curtain back. It's not, if it's not so obvious what we're doing here, is yes, we have criticisms, but you know what? We'll deal with that once she's in office. We will pressure her. We will criticize her when she's in office because the threat is too great to dissuade someone from voting for Kamala Harris right now.
Absolutely. And so,
fucking come on!
This was a CNN town hall, and afterward, of course, the anchors get on and they do their analysis and they talk about what they're hearing from their Republican sources, from their Democrat sources, and Dana Bash decided to say what she thought.
Well, I'll just tell you what I'm hearing from people who I have been talking to, and that is that if her goal was to close the deal, they're not sure she did that. And, you know, some people have asked, is she being held to a different standard? Maybe. But that's maybe the world that she's living in. And
but that's maybe the world that she's living in. That's just the world we've created for her to live in.
It's also
the fucking media.
Maybe she's being held to a different standard, Dana. She's absolutely being held to a different standard.
And who is doing the holding to the different standard?
Absolutely.
Dana Bash herself.
Absolutely. Because at every point, each one of these anchors, each person on these panels has a responsibility to say, yes, Kamala Harris could have been clearer with some of her answers. She could have, you know, been more direct about how she doesn't support Trump's border wall and maybe is just saying that because she needs to appeal to Republicans, you know. But all of this in context, Donald Trump is saying that he's going to use the military to round up non-white people and his political enemies. And he's saying it's going to be bloody as well. So how about that?
Yeah.
That's the other guy who's not showing up to answer questions because he can't. He doesn't like that. He doesn't like when the media asks him questions. Those are the people that are his political enemies that he's talking about sending the military after. This isn't a joke. This is what I got called hysterical for yesterday. That's Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Thankfully, Jake Tapper decided to illuminate some of this, right, with a statement that he made. I don't know if it was around the same time that Dana Bash said
I know, I know, because I talked about it on YouTube today.
Okay.
She said that at 10:11 Eastern time.
Okay.
He said this at 10:43 Eastern time.
You know, it strikes me what's interesting about the moment we're in right now is that we in the media are treating Vice President Harris like we treat a normal politician, and we're critiquing her answers, and we're talking about, well, she could have said this differently, she could have said that differently. Meanwhile, the Republican nominee literally is talking about liberals being the enemy within, talking about using the military to go after these people. His defenders say, oh, no, he's talking about going after illegal immigrants, or he's going after, you know, mobs in the street. And Trump will say, no, I mean going after the Pelosi's, going after Adam Schiff, going after Democrats. And these campaigns are in two different universes.
Yep. You know what?
They're in two different universes, says Jake Tapper, while Dana Bash, merely 30 minutes prior to that, said, well, she just lives in a different world that, you know, maybe it's not fair, but it is what it is. Mm-hmm. Pretty fucking gross.
Yeah, so...
And thankfully, Jake Tapper seems to maybe be waking up just a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I...
Because he's been the cause of some of this as well. He's been...
Oh, totally.
He's been in the cog of the media machine to create a level playing field between Kamala Harris and Donald Trump.
And it's something that we've talked about from the beginning of Trump coming onto the scene. This false attempt to play both sides, where you spend so much time talking about the other side when it pales in comparison to what Donald Trump is doing, right?
I wonder what is waking Jake Tapper up, and some other members of the media too. I wonder if it is this Atlantic article that just came out this week, where they're quoting John Kelly, who's gone on the record to talk about conversations with Donald Trump, where Donald Trump is advocating for, well, I wish I had Nazi generals under my command. I wish my generals were more like Adolf Hitler's Nazi troops.
Former President Donald Trump's ex-chief of staff John Kelly is speaking out to the New York Times with his strongest words yet against the former president, warning he would govern like a dictator. Kelly was asked whether he believes Trump is a fascist.
He's certainly an authoritarian, admires people who are dictators. He has said that. So he certainly falls into the general definition of fascist. Sure.
The retired general was also asked about previous reports that Trump complimented Hitler.
He commented more than once that, you know, that Hitler did some good things too. First of all, you should never say that. But if you knew what Hitler was all about from the beginning to the end, everything he did was in support of his racist, fascist life, philosophy, so that nothing he did you could argue was good. It was certainly not done for the right reason.
Kelly also responded to the former president's recent comments about using the military against domestic opponents.
But we have some sick people, radical left lunatics, and I think they're and it should be very easily handled by, if necessary, by National Guard, or if really necessary, by the military.
Kelly said Trump was repeatedly told by advisors not to use the military on Americans.
Originally, the conversation would be, Mr. President, that's outside your authority, or, that's a routine use. You really don't want to do that inside the United States. But now that he's talking about it as, I'm going to do it, it's disturbing.
A Trump campaign spokesperson dismissed the interview and told the Times Kelly had beclowned himself. And back in August, the former president said this about Kelly.
Guys like John Kelly are one of the dumbest people I've ever met. A bully, but a weak bully.
Last night on the campaign trail in North Carolina.
Everybody get out, but we're going to make it too big to rig.
The former president encouraged people to get out and vote early, as more than a million people in the state already have. But he spent much of his nearly two-hour rally going after Vice President Kamala Harris.
She's totally unfit for office. No one respects her.
So we've known for a long time that Donald Trump has fondness for Hitler.
Yeah.
This isn't the first time that we're hearing this, of course. And there was recently some kerfuffle online that there was going to be a story dropping on Donald Trump that was going to be the quote-unquote October surprise, and that it was going to really change things. And I think that all of this speaks to the desperation that we're all feeling, that we hope that that's possible. But when you see the way that conservatives rush to defend Donald Trump about his fondness for Hitler, I think we should all kind of come to terms with the idea that there is no story about Donald Trump that is going to drop, that's going to save us from this.
Yeah, it's not like I mean, look, remember when the Access Hollywood tape dropped and you had people like Mike Lee, like Jason Chaffetz at the time, who was he's a former congressman.
Right.
And he's like, I cannot support this. I will not be supporting Donald Trump in the election. Well, I have daughters. How can I look my daughters in the eye and tell?
Those days are gone.
Yeah. Not only that, both of those dipshits ended up supporting Donald Trump.
Yep.
And just betrayed their daughters and their loyalty to them because Donald Trump.
Yeah, those days are gone. I mean, think of that, though. During the Access Hollywood, when Republicans actually came forward and would criticize him. Now there's none of that. And even from people that are considered quote-unquote moderate, like Chris Sununu, who's out here saying, yeah, it just kind of comes with the package of Donald Trump.
Yeah.
But also on Fox News, right? Fox News host Brian Kilmeade. This is the Fox and Friends set on the couch. I think it wasn't Ainsley Earhart there this time. I think it was Kayleigh McEnany. And Brian Kilmeade goes on and he starts talking about what Donald Trump's comments about Hitler mean.
But the bottom line is, if you read H.R. McMaster's book, who is critical of President Trump in some of it and not in others, he talks about how Madison Kelly didn't like the president and they didn't think he deserved the job or they didn't think he was worthy of the job. And they went out of his way to make sure a lot of the things they asked him to do that they didn't like never got done. McMaster would be frustrated because he couldn't get their attention. And he would say, it's not your job to rein in the president. It's your job to do what the president wants. And then you factor in the fact that he runs his own company, coming from the business world, the first one we've ever had. It's not even a public company. And then he obviously has frustration. And I could absolutely see him going out, you know what? It would be great to have German generals that actually do what we asked them to do, knowing that's maybe not fully being cognizant of the third rail of German generals were Nazis and whatever. But he was frustrated with the slowdown of
It wasn't just a slowdown. It was insubordination. And there is a culture within Washington, not just when it comes to the generals, who, by the way, should be fired after what happened
in
Afghanistan, of insubordination in the sense that the bureaucrats run the government. The founders did not design this country to be that way. Unelected people don't get to run the country, even if you have four stars behind your name. And I think they were very frustrated that you had this outside guy that says, listen, I'm in charge now.
And the German generals were Nazis or whatever. He's yada, yada, yada-ing Nazis.
Mm-hmm.
Making it try to make sense.
Mm-hmm.
In the Atlantic article, it talks about the conversation John Kelly had with Donald Trump where he's like, I want some German generals. He's like, you mean Bismarck's generals, right? You mean the Kaiser's generals. And Trump's like, no. I mean Hitler. I mean Hitler's generals. Those are the generals I want.
Mm-hmm.
Not even to take into account the fact that I seem to remember Hitler losing the war.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't the greatest generals, were they? They lost.
Well, it's also, we're not even talking about in this Atlantic article how there's reporting on Donald Trump offering to pay for the funeral of a soldier.
Vanessa Guillen.
And then he gets a bill for that, and he says something like, it doesn't cost $60,000 to bury a fucking Mexican.
Yeah.
And so what is Brian Kilmeade's excuse for that, right? He would say that Donald Trump didn't say that. It's like they make excuses for the things that they feel like they can make excuses for, and then they just say, yeah, that's not true. He didn't say that.
Well,
for other things.
What's interesting is the statement that was released about that from Kash Patel about the incident, when it's recounted and after the fact, when they're trying to play cleanup, what he said was Donald Trump offered. He doesn't confirm, yeah, Donald Trump did pay for the funeral. He just says, yeah, Donald Trump did offer to pay.
Mm-hmm.
And then freaked out, told Mark Meadows, don't pay the bill. Do not do it. These fucking people are trying to rip me off. It doesn't cost $60,000 to bury a fucking Mexican.
Mm-hmm.
And crickets from Republicans.
Yeah. So, of course, Fox News, the various conservative commentators, they're not the only ones that are defending Donald Trump's comments about Hitler. Also, I already talked about Chris Sununu. It's seriously been everybody. There hasn't been one person that I have seen on the news that is being asked about these comments that is doing what they used to do about the Access Hollywood tape. Not one person is saying.
Yeah, they lean on the it's Trump derangement syndrome. John Kelly, a guy who worked for Donald Trump as the Secretary of Homeland Security, who implemented the child separation policy, who went and accepted the role of chief of staff to Donald Trump. Not a never Trumper, not a fucking Trump derangement syndrome guy. This is a guy who's bad on policy and also dedicated 4 decades of his life as an active duty Marine, attaining the rank of 4-star general in the United States Marine Corps. Not some bleeding heart liberal wokester.
Right. So there's another clip here of billionaire investor Bill Ackman defending Donald Trump's Hitler comments, this time on CNBC.
First of all, you were a longtime Democrat. You've supported Democrats. We talked about this.
I would say I've always been a centrist, but I've supported more Democrats by far than Republicans.
I just want to read you. This is John Kelly, the former chief of staff of Trump. He worked with him directly.
Sure.
And he says that in many cases, I would agree with some of his policies. So you agree with the policy piece of this that I think Trump is presenting. But he says it's very dangerous. It's a dangerous thing to have the wrong person elected in high office. He goes on to say, in his opinion, he believes that Trump meets the definition of a fascist, would govern like a dictator if allowed, and has no understanding of the Constitution or the concept of the rule of law. He goes on to say that Trump had made admiring statements to him about Hitler, you're Jewish and care about Israel, had expressed contempt for disabled veterans, and had characterized those who died on the battlefield for the U.S. as losers and suckers. How do you get your head around that?
One, it's one person stating a series of things, which I don't know whether...
There are 28 people who have worked for the president, not just in close proximity, but in the Oval Office with him, who have come out publicly and expressed things of this sort.
Kamala Harris lost 92% of her staff, too.
But that's actually, I think that's a relevant sort of point. So if you want to talk about...
One piece on that. There are people who would argue that maybe she was not an organized person and was not a good executive in that regard, right? But I don't know of anybody who came out publicly against Kamala Harris claiming that she was for Hitler, that she was against the Constitution, that she was calling people who died on the battlefield on our behalf losers.
Let me address. So number one, I don't think Trump is for Hitler. Okay, I think that's absurd. Okay.
And you know,
first of all,
why say it if, when you know that that?
I get this. It's my hour.
Maybe give me an hour.
How long it takes?
Please. Yeah. You know it's not true, why say it?
So one, Trump's not for Hitler. Most of Trump's friends are Jewish. He grew up in the New York City real estate community. He's got a daughter who's Jewish. He's got grandchildren who's Jewish. Right. He was probably the most pro-Israel president in terms of committing to do things and actually executing on them. Moving the embassy, delivering the control of the Golan Heights to Israel.
I
think it's absurd. But the other thing that hasn't been...
Why are there so few good and decent fucking people who are billionaires? Why?
Well, that's
this guy's a billionaire who's really risen to prominence and fame after the October 7th attacks last year.
Well, I have an answer for you, and that's because you cannot become a billionaire in an ethical way. You need to exploit people in order to become a billionaire.
Yeah, I think
down the line, you're
doing
it. I
think largely that's true. I don't think that's exclusively a rule. I don't believe that.
Mm-hmm.
But when assholes like this open their mouths, it pushes me toward that position you just expressed.
Yeah. Well, and we're going to take a little break from the torrent of the bad news here and play a Tim Walz clip, because they haven't been letting Tim Walz be Tim Walz. And I feel like we finally got a moment this week that reminded me of when he first came on the scene, and he's like not been out doing what he does best. And you're going to love this, Jesse, because I thought this would actually be the most beautiful word in the dictionary for you. This word that he uses about Elon Musk.
And that's not a joke. But look, I'm not going to waste all the time I'm in. I'm going to talk about his running mate. His running mate, Elon Musk. Seriously. Where is Senator Vance after he got asked the simplest question in the world at the debate? Did Donald Trump lose the 2020 election? And after 2 weeks, he finally said, no, he didn't. That's where he's been spending his time. But that's it. So, look, Elon's on that stage, jumping around, skipping like a dipshit on these things. You know it.
So true.
Well, I also... we're going to talk a little bit more about Elon Musk and how he's trying to pay people to vote for Trump, basically. I mean, he would say he's not doing that, but Donald Trump made an appearance at a McDonald's this week to act like he was working there and it was shut down. And, you know, he got to take a basket out of the fryer and he got to learn that people aren't handling the fries with their hands.
Let me say this. Let me plug another show. If you have the time and you want to watch a fucking hilarious segment, watch, what's his name? Seth Meyers.
Oh.
Closer look on this from Thursday or from Wednesday the 23rd.
Mm-hmm.
Man, so good. Fucking brilliant.
Very funny. I also found it very annoying because I have worked in a kitchen. It was my first job, making $5.45 an hour, and he did nothing that would require anything difficult. They should have had him clean that fryer.
As Seth Meyers pointed out, he didn't even tie his own apron on.
Yeah, and all these conservative commentators, like Matt Walsh, tweeted that he learned how to do the job in 2 minutes. And that's an argument against raising minimum wage.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's like, he didn't learn to do shit in 2 minutes. There's no way that Donald Trump or Matt Walsh would last 15 minutes in a kitchen during a lunch rush. There's no way. They do not have the skills to do that. And rich people love to talk about that these jobs are not skilled labor. Until you try to go do that job, you have to multitask. You have to know what you're doing. You have to put things in order. You have to know what you're going into the fridge to grab and bring out and all the prep that you're doing. Like, it involves so much. You have to work with a team. You have to be able to communicate. You have to deal with the public, which is one of the most difficult things on earth. But Donald Trump came away from this experience, and he was so successful at it, according to conservatives. He doesn't even know what the thing is called that cooks the fries.
And those French fries were good. They were right out of the, they were right out of whatever the hell they may come out of, but they were, but think of it, and the press refuses to acknowledge.
He mastered the job in 2 minutes, says Matt Walsh. They right out of the, whatever the hell you call it, that they're made in. They're French fries that are cooked in a fryer.
God, and I know, again, this is like a minor thing, but it just adds to the pile of reasons that he's an absolute
nightmare. I hate the fuck out of Donald Trump. I cannot wait.
Until we don't have to worry about him anymore.
Yep, that's it.
Yep.
That's the tweet.
You need to... Whatever you were thinking of saying, I don't know what it was, but you better reel it in. You better reel it in real quick. All right, so should we drop the drop just in case?
What?
I mean, just to cover
the views and opinions of Jesse Dolemore are solely those of Jesse Dolemore and do not reflect the views and opinions of Brittany Page, who is a far superior person and much more measured and reasonable in her views and analysis.
All right.
Let's talk more about Elon Musk and him paying voters and the fact that it was kind of suggested by experts, quote unquote, that he was not going to be chastised or even there was going to be any commentary prior to the election by the federal government on this. And that apparently is not the case, right?
Yeah, the Justice Department did send a warning to Elon Musk's American PAC because he's doing a $1 million sweepstakes to registered voters in swing states. That if you sign this petition, then you are entered into the sweepstakes, and he's doing a drawing where he's giving away $1 million per day. And we'll get more into the response, but first, just more on what he's doing.
Sure.
New concerns being raised tonight over how the world's richest person is throwing his money around on behalf of Donald Trump.
The next thing we'd like to do is to announce today's winner of the $1 million prize.
Elon Musk has announced that he'll be giving away $1 million a day randomly to registered voters, but it's only in 7 battleground states and only if they sign a petition from Musk's super PAC saying they support the First Amendment right to free speech and the Second Amendment right to bear arms.
And all you have to do is sign a petition in support of the Constitution. If you already believe in the Constitution, you're just signing something you already believe and you can win $1 million. That's awesome.
But not so awesome to some election law experts and to the Democratic governor of Pennsylvania, one of those battleground states.
I think it's something that law enforcement can take a look at, but it does raise some serious questions.
Why might it be illegal for Musk to pay people to register and sign that petition?
The vote buying in this country has been a problem in our long history. It is criminal to offer payment or accept payment, anything of value, in exchange for registering or voting. It's also been applied to when Ben and Jerry's wanted to offer free ice cream cones if you showed up with your I voted sticker.
Musk has already given $1 million checks to at least 2 people in Pennsylvania, where he's been stumping for Trump.
So, by the way, John had no idea. So, anyway, you're welcome.
On ABC's The View, Kamala Harris's running mate Tim Walz slammed Musk's giveaway as a sign of desperation from their opponents.
Well, I think that's what you do when you have no plan for the public, when you have no economic plan that's going to benefit the middle class.
Musk has already given more than $75 million to his own pro-Trump super PAC.
Donald Trump has to win this election. He really does.
Analysts say the Justice Department could pursue charges against the billionaire for this $1 million giveaway, but...
You're putting the Department of Justice injecting itself into a hotly contested, disputed case of interpretation of a criminal law just weeks ahead of the election, which is, I don't think, where the Department of Justice wants to find itself.
Musk's side is saying the giveaway is legal, a job opportunity, because the winners have appeared in promotional videos and will serve as spokespeople.
It certainly doesn't make it all better. There are laws around what constitutes work for hire, whether you're being paid fair market value for those kinds of things.
Now, if this giveaway is pursued further legally, would the recipients eventually have to give the money back? Analysts say that's not clear. One expert says there are rules saying that money that's been wrongfully taken does have to be given back. But he also says this situation with Elon Musk is uncharted territory. Wolf?
Brian Todd reporting for us. Brian, thank you very much.
So the frustrating thing to hear is that line about the Justice Department is unlikely to take any kind of action because it would be seen as essentially election interference, right? And it reminds me of all the conversations surrounding Donald Trump's various court cases and the various charges, felony charges that he's facing, and the conversations of, is this going to be considered election interference? And it's all you should hear in that is that you can reach a certain level in society where the law no longer applies to you, where the consequences no longer apply to you.
The Justice Department doesn't want to be perceived as interfering in election when they stop someone from interfering in an election.
How about just universally apply the law to everyone, regardless of timing, and then you don't need to worry about optics of anything. You're just doing your fucking job. I don't understand.
I'm also very sick and fucking tired of this. I see it on people's Twitter profiles and shit. I'm a big supporter of the 2A, of the Second Amendment, and this is even tied to your unbridled support of the Constitution, and I'm a big fan of free speech and the First Amendment. I'm a big supporter of the Second Amendment and the right to bear arms. I'm also a supporter of the Second Amendment because it's the Constitution of the United States of America. You don't hear these dipshits say, well, I'm a signed on supporter of the Third Amendment. I am opposed to the quartering of troops. Like, shut the fuck up. You don't know anything about the Constitution, dipshit.
So
Tim Walz was right.
A letter from the Justice Department's Public Integrity Section, which investigates potential election-related law violations went to Musk's Political Action Committee, according to people briefed on the matter. This is from CNN's reporting. I don't know that we know what the letter said. I don't think there has been any further information about what the letter says. But I do think it's interesting just to talk about Elon Musk's particular motivation for why he's getting so involved in this election and why he so desperately wants Donald Trump to win. And that's related to a lot of the ways that his companies are intertwined with the federal government.
Receiving billions of dollars, tens of billions of dollars maybe in total from his contracts with the government.
And so there was an interesting interview that PBS NewsHour's Jeff Bennett did with New York Times' investigative reporter David Fahrenthold that illuminated some of the, I keep using that word today. I feel like I've said that several times. That
shined a light on.
I know. Why do I keep doing that? I don't normally say that. And now I'm saying it repeatedly. And now I'm in my head about how much I'm saying it. So anyway, it really illuminated some of these issues.
So before we delve into Elon Musk's political leanings, help us understand the degree to which his sprawling tech empire is entangled with the federal government.
Enormously entangled. It's hard to overstate how entangled Elon Musk is with the federal government, in that there's two dimensions to that. One is the federal government is a customer of his, a huge customer of his. NASA and the Defense Department pay billions of dollars a year to SpaceX to launch their satellites, to launch their people, launch their rockets. There's 300 contracts between the federal government and Elon Musk's companies this year alone. The other dimension of that relationship is that he fights with the federal government all the time. Regulators from different agencies are limiting what his companies can do, checking on his companies, making sure they live up to their promises. He doesn't like that. He's often complaining about these different regulators. So there's a good side and there's a bad side, but there's a huge breadth of entanglements between Elon and the federal government.
Meantime, Elon Musk is pouring millions of dollars into Donald Trump's reelection effort. What's the connection between Elon Musk's business interests and Donald Trump's electoral success come election day? What's in it for Elon Musk as he sees it?
Well, what he's done is he's sort of prodded Trump to say that if Trump is elected, he will name Elon Musk to be the head of a government efficiency commission, basically a commission that has the responsibility or the power to recommend huge cuts in the spending and the regulation the federal government does. Now, why does that matter for Elon? Well, it matters a lot because now the people that oversee him, the agencies that oversee him, Elon's going to flip that relationship. Now he oversees them. He's the one who can decide, okay, how much is your budget going to be? How much cuts am I going to recommend? So now you're in a situation where the people who are supposed to be keeping tabs on Elon Musk and his companies, making sure that they're safe for the public, he's going to have a position of power over them. So the question is, how will he use that power? And even if he doesn't use it explicitly, how will that sort of chill and scare the regulators who are supposed to be keeping tabs on his businesses?
You and your colleagues report that two of Elon Musk's companies, SpaceX and Tesla, account for at least $15.4 billion in government contracts over the past decade. How did the federal government become so dependent on Elon Musk's companies over the years?
Well, most of that is a story about SpaceX. SpaceX is really good at what it does. It shoots rockets up in the air much more often, much more safely, much more effectively than any of its rivals. And so SpaceX, through some lobbying, but mostly just through its own sheer, you know, skill, has managed to take over the space launch business in the U.S. So that means that for NASA, basically SpaceX dictates to NASA when NASA can shoot up its biggest payloads, not the other way around. The Defense Department is enormously indebted to SpaceX, is a huge customer of SpaceX's, because SpaceX shoots up their spy satellites and other satellites. And because SpaceX's Starlink satellite communication service provides this incredible satellite service all over the world for communication. So those two agencies alone, NASA and the Defense Department, account for a huge chunk of that spending because they want to be in space. And Mr. Musk's companies are the very best at getting you there.
So they go on to discuss that, you know, Elon Musk may be thinking that if Kamala Harris gets elected and she wants to go after him, that she could go after him. But this reporter says that there's no way to do that. Like, there's no one that takes SpaceX's place in these contracts. There's no one that then goes to over SpaceX.
And this is the danger and the damage done by privatizing NASA and space travel. This is the fucking problem here.
And so that's a fake concern that Elon Musk has. But also think about it this way. So in that first news package about Elon Musk, you heard him giving out the $1 million checks to these people that are never going to, you know, have the money that Elon Musk has, certainly.
Right.
And I mean, I don't know their financial situations. Maybe they're wealthy. I don't know, but I doubt it, right? And they are pledging a vote. Well, they're pledging their support for the Constitution, Elon Musk says.
Mm-hmm.
But
especially that Third Amendment.
They're going to be voting for Donald Trump. They're voting in the way that Elon Musk wants them to vote.
Yeah.
And they're voting to protect rich people. They're protecting Elon Musk and his money. I mean, think of that. It's kind of tragic when you think about it. When you watch that person walk onto that stage smiling, collecting that $1 million check.
We'll see how long that, what's remaining of that, which will probably roughly, you know, $650,000. We'll see how long that lasts them.
Because
when they buy a bunch of fucking jet skis and four-wheelers with it.
Because this is Elon Musk's goal. He wants Donald Trump to appoint him as the Government Efficiency Commission.
Right.
So then instead of having people that oversee Elon would be the one overseeing that and deciding what gets cut and deciding what's in the budget.
And what, listen, we've seen what he's done with his efficiency strategies with Twitter, which is worth like 80% less than it was when he bought it or something. Like, he's just driven it into the fucking ground.
Yeah, but he's also, aside from all that, he's just a dangerous person.
Absolutely.
And so, again, this is just more evidence that should Donald Trump win, there's going to be bad stuff happening across the board. And
we haven't even mentioned where he's going to place Robert Kennedy Jr. in his administration.
The people that should not ever, ever be rewarded with power are going to gain much more power.
Immense power.
And it's very, very scary. Hence the grinding the teeth and hence the broken neck.
Yeah.
So
broken teeth, grinded down neck.
I do want to say that Donald Trump, you know, he's been talking about how he is going to protect Social Security and Medicare. But one thing that he doesn't talk about protecting is Medicaid.
Well, that's also, we don't believe that he's not going to do anything to Social Security.
Of course.
Or Medicare.
Of course.
Because we know what analysts say about what the chances are that Social Security will just be insolvent based on what Project 2025 wants to do.
Right. So there was a reporter with Huffington Post that reached out to the Trump campaign and asked if they would pledge to not cut Medicaid. And they were offered a vague response, quote, as President Trump said, he will release more details. You know, it's a concept of a plan. But overall position on healthcare remains the same. Bring down the costs and increase the quality of care by improving competition in the marketplace.
Mm.
So, yes, you know, bring
very
down,
specific.
Bring down the costs and increase the quality, but no specific plan.
Well, you know how he's going to save Social Security. Drill, baby, drill.
So I want to take this as an opportunity to highlight an important news package that I came across. I think this is from NBC News, but I've moved it so many different times across episodes that it might be, I don't know. I think it's NBC. And it's about the Medicaid unwinding that recently happened, because during the COVID-19 pandemic, states kept people enrolled in Medicaid. Normally you have to reapply. You have to submit another application to keep your benefits. And they kept them on because the pandemic was going on. So they didn't force people to submit an application in order to keep their very important healthcare coverage. And then the COVID era protections expired and states started reevaluating eligibility. And through this process, millions of people lost their Medicaid coverage. And there were obviously very severe consequences for this.
Lauren Aiken is legally blind, confined to a wheelchair with cerebral palsy. Even though she's 34 years old, this Jacksonville, Florida resident cannot do much alone.
You need help with everything from,
yes,
from getting up?
Getting up to preparing meals, to going out in the community. I need help, I would say, almost 24/7.
And yet for more than a month, Aiken says she was alone overnight after the state of Florida revoked her essential Medicaid coverage.
It was pure panic because I'm like, What the heck happened?
During the pandemic, the federal government required states to keep providing health care coverage to Medicaid recipients, even if they lost their eligibility. Then the public health emergency went away, and eligibility rules came back last year for the program that's supposed to help low-income and disabled Americans. Since then, more than 25 million people have lost coverage during what's been dubbed the unwinding of Medicaid. And according to a health policy research group, roughly 70% of those who lost coverage did so because of procedural reasons like paperwork issues, though some may genuinely not qualify anymore.
Do you have anything? I have mail for you. Okay.
Kimberly Bryant helps lead Aiken's care team. She says Aiken received digital notices that were not sent to her care coordinators.
Even if she did find this online, would she have been able to read this?
No. She can't see that because she's legally blind.
Many patient advocates say Florida's unwinding has been particularly sloppy.
And it's caused me a lot of stress.
They estimate thousands of disabled people, like Lauren, are being impacted in that state alone. And now plaintiffs in a class action lawsuit allege the state has violated the constitutional rights of tens of thousands of Floridians, ending coverage without adequate notice and with little or no explanation of the actual reason. We repeatedly asked Florida officials for comment, which they never gave. So we went to a press conference to ask Governor Ron DeSantis why people who should have Medicaid lost coverage. The secretary of the Florida Department of Children and Families stepped in to say this.
We're committed to ensuring that anyone who is eligible maintains coverage.
We do have an appointment Friday.
But without coverage, Bryant says she took out personal loans to pay Aiken's care team.
A little bit over $12,000 now.
$12,000?
Yes.
Of your money?
My money.
Why would you put out $12,000 for someone you have only known months?
I guess because if it was me, I would want somebody to care. I couldn't walk away.
Late last week, Lauren Aiken's care team says her coverage was restored. It took almost 3 months and a team of people helping her. Meanwhile, Aiken says she's lost faith in the system that's supposed to help her live life to the fullest.
If it can happen to me, it can happen to anybody.
Jesse Kirsch, NBC News, Jacksonville, Florida.
This is just more evidence of a war against the poor rather than a war on poverty.
Yeah, and it also speaks to the red tape and paperwork that is often put into place to try to deter people from actually getting coverage and getting benefits. And I do want to shout out, because I don't want that, I don't want the confusing nature of who was talking, what was going on in that clip. If you're not watching, the care coordinator that was caring for this woman, her name's Kimberly Bryant, and she took out $12,000 in personal loans when this woman lost her coverage in order to care for her. And, you know, for everything that's going on and that is, you know, making us so stressed out, we have to remember that there's people like that out there, Kimberly Bryant, that, you know, care about other people and are doing what is necessary to take care of them. And something that she shouldn't have to do, by the way.
Yeah.
I often get comments on my videos when I talk about poverty or homelessness, and people will say to me, well, what are you doing? Who are you taking into your house? And it's like, you shouldn't be asking that question, because it's the government that should be providing for the citizens.
Yeah.
And it's great that people like Kimberly Bryant exist, who genuinely give a shit about their jobs and care about other people and are willing to do something like that. But the government shouldn't be letting millions of low-income and disabled Americans down and leaving them in a place where they cannot get the care that they need. That is unacceptable. And so when we have a Donald Trump who doesn't have a specific plan, isn't making any promises related to Medicaid, we know he doesn't care about poor people. We know he has contempt for disabled Americans, given what he said about his nephew, I believe. We know what his position on this would be. So shout out to NBC News' Jesse Kirsch for this amazing report, and shout out to Kimberly Bryant, too.
Yeah, it's important. I mean, we need to... The reason we have pushed this clip from episode to episode, because it's been too busy, but brought it back and made sure we wanted to talk about it, is because these are the stakes of this election. It is people like the people who have been that were featured in that news package, that their lives will be made better from a Kamala Harris, Tim Walz administration. And juxtapose that against materially damaged if a Donald Trump gets elected.
Right.
There are a multiplicity of issues that are at play here beyond foreign policy. Anyway, we'd love to know what you think. 657-464-7609. And of course, as always, you can email idoubtit@dollamore.com. If you would like to help support this work, help keep the lights on, and help help us move the conversation forward on an episode-by-episode basis, you can go to patreon.com/idoubtitpodcast, and we would appreciate your support very much. Joining the Patreon supporters and the family of people who have surrounded the show that we're so appreciative of. We will see you next time. Until then, for Brittany Page, I'm Jesse Dollimore, and this has been I Doubt.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
I'm so sorry I'm late. I was just talking to my sister about protecting abortion rights.
Wait, didn't we already do that in Ohio? We passed issue 1 last year.
I know, by a wide margin too. But now it's up to our state Supreme Court to decide whether they enforce it or ignore it.
Ignore it? Will they really do that?
They will if we don't keep extremists out of the court. But we can protect our rights by electing Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that. Listen, I can barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
Here's a trick. All you have to do is remember, don't stop fighting.
Don't stop fighting. Oh, I get it. DSF, Donnelly Stewart Forbes. I love that.
Tell everyone you know, if you supported issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue, a community of women who care about reproductive rights as much as you do.